Tim McNally. Welcome to the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show, NOLA Drinks Edition. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody. Welcome to the NOLA Drinks Edition of the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show here on WGSO 990 AM New Orleans. This is your host, Brian Diaz. Happy to be here today with you, the unofficial start of the weekend, the unofficial start of the holiday weekend. Hope everybody's got some holiday cheer already going on and some good plans in store for Christmas weekend here coming up and holiday week next week. Hope you're not working too hard. Kind of a slimy, dreary day out there, friends, isn't it? It's like you look outside if you're inside and you think I'm going to walk outside and it's going to be cold. And it's not cold. It's just dreary. And I'm going to use that word again, slimy. It feels like it's slimy outside. I was complaining last week about it was pretty cold, and so I was wearing pants and closed-toed shoes, which regular listeners know I don't like. I'm back in shorts and flip-flops, so at least I'm happy about that here in the studio. Not that anybody really needs to care about that, but I'm just sharing that anyway. But again, happy holidays, everybody out there. I hope that you have a joyous and wonderful Christmas weekend here coming up. Get a chance to spend some time with family and friends and all of that other good stuff. Tomorrow, we're going to be doing our annual tradition where we get together the Friday before Christmas. We do our guys' lunch, and that includes our good friend Tim McNally, who we know does the Dine, Wine, Spirit Show this time slot Monday through Wednesday and Friday, and a bunch of other fellas. And we kind of move the meal around from year to year. I've been relatively new to the game. We're doing it at a Crescent City Steakhouse tomorrow, which I'm very excited about. Apparently, the original one a number of years ago, that first Christmas guys lunch with this group, was held there. So, as is being said, returning to the scene of the crime. And there's probably going to be a lot of crime going on. But it's a lot of fun. What we do is we actually, everybody brings a couple wines, and we blind taste those wines, and then we all make fools of ourselves trying to guess where those wines came from, what varietal they are, all of that other stuff. And it's a lot of fun. Actually, a lot of the folks are there. Some folks are just, you know, big wine aficionados, several folks that actually work in the wine and liquor business. So we all think we know what we're talking about. I know that every time I usually get about 2 out of 20 right, and nobody else is really that much better. But it's always a lot of fun. And then it's always a lot of fun, too, when certain people like to bring really odd stuff in to try and stump us, which, as you're probably gathering, isn't really all that hard. But we'll see if, you know, like our good friend Jack Jelenko decides to bring in some sort of weird sparkling wine from Massachusetts or something like that. That may happen. Who knows? But that'll be a lot of fun, our little annual pre-Christmas tradition. Wanted to mention a few other things, friends, that are going on around town. I meant to mention this last week, and I didn't get a chance to, just kind of ran out of time. But the New Orleans Museum of Art, every Wednesday from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., it's free admission for Louisiana residents. So all you got to do is just show up, show some form of a Louisiana-accepted ID, and you get into the museum for free. So that's pretty cool. Again, that's at the New Orleans Museum of Art every Wednesday from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Check that out. Speaking of the New Orleans Museum of Art, something very interesting coming up tomorrow evening from 5 to 9 p.m., so Friday, December 23rd, if you're listening to the podcast. So it's Friday, December 23rd. I'm telling you that. So, you know, tomorrow from the perspective of the radio broadcast, of course. And that is going to be Friday nights at NOMA. And they're showing a film on Klimt, on Gustav Klimt. And then there's going to be music actually provided by Calvin Johnson Jr. And what they do is that this is a regular Friday night ongoing series at NOMA where they have lectures, live music, movies, children's activities, these sorts of things. And again, so this weekend centers on the famous mixed media artist Gustav Klimt, Austrian guy, of course. And in the movie, he's actually, which I've not seen, I'm very curious to see this, played by John Malkovich, the great actor. So that should be a lot of fun. And it's even talking about the era in Vienna, in Austria, where Klimt was active. And this is in the late 19th and early 20th centuries. And I guess they actually have a piece of Klimt's work, one of his paintings, on display. And there's going to be a whole bunch of other things. Again, some live music. That's from 5:30 to 8:30. The film is at 7:30. Again, that's at the New Orleans Museum of Art. They don't give a price. Maybe there's an ask donation. But that sounds like it could be a lot of fun. Also, there's a cool program, friends, that is going on here through basically today and tomorrow. It started yesterday, so through Friday, December 23rd. And actually, they're saying Saturday, which of course will be the 24th. I'm thinking maybe they're closed, but this is 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., so you're probably going to miss that today unless you hustle over there. And then tomorrow from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. It is through the SPCA of Louisiana. And the one in New Orleans is located at 1700 Mardi Gras Boulevard. And what's going on is that you are able to adopt an animal from the Louisiana SPCA and find their forever home just in time for the holidays. And that's why you need to get there by tomorrow. That's what they're doing. And all adoptions are available for what I believe is a discounted price of $25. So friends, a lot of pets out there that need your love and need a new home, go check them out. Again, Home for the Holidays and Holiday Program there, 1700 Mardi Gras Boulevard, Louisiana, SPCA here in New Orleans, tomorrow from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., just $25 to bring home an animal. So that should be pretty fun. Friends, got a good show coming up for you here today. In the second hour, I'm going to be joined by two good friends of mine. This time, it's sort of, you know, we do this regular feature called At the Bar, which is typically, if you listen on a regular basis, is a sort of bartender's round table, and we chit-chat about bar stuff. So, you know, we chat about trends in the drink world or cocktails they've come up with. We swap stories about craziness we've seen being a cocktail hero in the bar, these sorts of things. And it's, you know, typically been a bartender. Sometimes we take on some social issues and other things of maybe a little bit more import than just talking about drinks. But hey, and I'm not saying talking about drinks isn't important. Don't get me wrong. It's what the show's, but we wouldn't even have a show if talking about drinks wasn't important. So we'll just clarify that. But sometimes we talk about social issues and things like that connected to the world of drink and food. And today coming in, we're going to do it a little different. I guess we're going to call it At the Bar because I don't have a name for it otherwise, but I have two wonderful chefs that are actually coming in and two very good friends. Chef Alex Harrell, who is the chef and owner of Angeline, which is a wonderful restaurant in the French Quarter on Chartist Street, up a ways by Ursuline or so, up in that, I forget. We'll get the address. We'll have Alex tell you what the address is, where you can find it. But Alex was the original executive chef who helped open Sylvain, also on Chartist, right there, right by Jackson Square, part of the LeBlanc Smith restaurant group. And so Alex got that place open going back 6-7 years ago, I think, when the place opened. And at the time, his sous chef was Martha Wiggins. Martha Wiggins is now the executive chef of Sylvain. They like to promote from within, which is great. But Martha, I think, views Alex as somewhat of a mentor. And so we're going to have them both on the show together, which I'm thrilled about. It's kind of fun to see them both in one place again. And I think we're going to talk a little bit about their background, their respective establishments, cooking style, talk about maybe what they're going to have on their holiday tables, some fun things like that. So that should be a little bit of should be fun. Coming up here after the break in just a second, we're going to talk a little bit about eggnog. Yes, that iconic Christmas drink and some of its hazy origins, like most things in the cocktail world. After that, we're going to talk a little bit about some trends to look for or think about in the beverage world in 2017. And then we'll come back with maybe a little bit of a silly wine news and thoughts. So that's about where we're at, friends, here on the NOLA Drink Show, WGSO 990 AM New Orleans. We're going to talk about eggnog. So, hey, come on back.
Springtime in New Orleans is beckoning us back on our front porches, favorite patio bars and restaurants. Dickie Brennan's Tableau offers some of the best outdoor dining in the French Quarter. Soak in the beautiful weather on the balcony overlooking Jackson Square or by the whispering fountain in the cozy courtyard. Tableau also offers an amazing happy hour from 2 to 6 p.m. every day of the week, offering half-price beer and wine on tap, $5 classic cocktails, and discounted small plates. For menus, reservations, and more, visit TableauFrenchQuarter.com. Tableau is located at 616 St. Peter Street.
Are you tired of drinking the same wines? Switch it up. Try the Kreutz Family Cellars wine. Kreutz Family Cellars is a small, family-owned winery in Sonoma County that makes wines from some of the most prized vineyards throughout Northern California. Each bottle of Kreutz Family Cellars wines has a magnolia on the label. The magnolia is a symbol of the family's southern roots and their way of life. True, honest, and fun. Look for the magnolia and pick up a bottle of Kreutz Family Cellars wines today.
Hi, New Orleans. It's Laura from Sobu, and I'm here with Chef Juan Carlos.
Sobu's got happier hour. It's 3 to 6 from 3 to 6.
It's bar bars, sips, and snacks, all for $3 to $6 from 3 to 6 p.m. every day.
Laura's got something to please everyone at the bar for happier hour, all for 3 to 6 here at Sobu.
And we know you'll want to try a smoky pulled pork taco or any of the other delicious snacks on our happier hour menu.
Sobu's happier hour, every day from 3 to 6, 310 Charter Street in the Quarter.
Complimentary parking next door at the W Hotel.
Thank you.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show. Brian Diaz here, your host. Once again, happy holidays. Thanks for tuning in today. Thanks for listening to the podcast. If that's where you're hearing the show, I appreciate it. Yes, the holidays are upon us, and I hope that you are enjoying the joys of the season and season's greetings to everyone. And this got me actually thinking, friends, that iconic drink that we always have here through the holidays, be it starting in the U.S. Thanksgiving, starting, you know, obviously on Christmas, New Year's. Yes, there's sparkling wine, and we do that, and we've talked about that recently. We'll talk about that again here in the near future. But that sort of one iconic holiday drink, eggnog. I love eggnog. Loved eggnog as a little kid, the non-spirited version, of course, and then the adult version as I've gotten older. And that actually got me wondering a little bit about, you know, where did all this come from? It's an odd term, sort of, eggnog. What does the word mean? And the drink itself. Now, as we know it, the term, we call it eggnog. It's also been called milk punch or egg milk punch. And it's a rich, chilled, sweetened, typically sweetened with sugar, dairy-based beverage. And, you know, we use milk, we use cream, we use sugar, and then whipped eggs, of course, are really the key thing that gives it that frothy texture. And then the adult version, as we know, usually involves a distilled spirit, brandy, rum, or bourbon. And the history of that is actually rather interesting. The drink is consumed really throughout much of the Western world in various variations all over the place. Now, looking back to the history of the drink, which I find very interesting, like most things and something that we talk about on the show quite often, like the history of the term cocktail, these things are kind of hazy. And really, to no surprise, eggnog is another one of those things that's actually not that different. It's also hazy in its origins, the etymology of the term, and even where the drink comes from are debated. Most culinary historians are not in agreement, but there is a drink that many cite, and it goes back to the 13th century, and it's called a posset, P-O-S-S-E-T, and it was a hot, milky, ale-like drink, and it was drunk by monks. I will argue this, that monks were probably the original craft cocktail bartenders in the world. They all, when you go back and you look at these things, where these drinks come from, it always seems to be the monks, right? The monks seem to be the ones coming up with this stuff. I guess they had a lot of time on their hands coming up with these drinks. But it was a drink that was, I guess, with ale, and it was then in the 13th century also known to be to include eggs and figs. And this sort of makes sense because milk, eggs, and sherry were all considered foods for the wealthy. So eggnog apparently was used to toast prosperity and good health. I think sherry was actually blended into some of these original versions of the drink. Now, the term is kind of hazy as well. There's a lot of debate on this. According to the Oxford English Dictionary, nog was a, quote, kind of strong beer brewed in East Anglia, which is in the UK. Alternatively, nog, the term nog, N-O-G, may stem from noggin, N-O-G-G-I-N, a Middle English term for small or carved wooden mug used to serve alcohol. However, the British drink was also called an egg flip, and this comes from the practice of flipping, meaning rapidly pouring the mixture between two pitchers to mix it back and forth. Now, yet another dictionary lists the word as being an Americanism invented somewhere between 1765 and 1775, and there's a professor, his name from Boston College, called Frederick Douglass Opie, and he wrote that the term is a combination of two colonial slang words, rum, which was referred to, which we know this, was referred to as grog, and bartenders, they served in these small wooden mugs called noggins. So grog, noggins, we kind of get down that road. The drink first became known as egg and grog and later as eggnog. Now, the dude who is actually the executive editor for vocabulary.com, his name is Ben Zimmer. He disputes that the egg and grog theory, that it, basically he disputes this. He says that it lacks proof. He says that the term nog may relate to a old Scottish term actually called nug, N-U-G-G, or nugged ale, N-U-G-G-E-D, ale, meaning, quote, ale warmed with a hot poker. So who knows where this term actually comes from? I don't even know how these people dispute this, or where, you know, trying to find these original quotations. That we do know. The original, the first example, known example of the term eggnog in one word as we know it now, E-G-G-N-O-G, was in 1775. And a Maryland clergyman and philologist, his name was Jonathan Boucher, wrote a poem about the drink, which was not published until 30 years after his death. So apparently 1775, but then 30 years after his death, we're able to date that. And he mentions eggnog by term in his poem. The first printed use of the term basically after that, or the, you know, in popular media, was in 1788. The New Jersey Journal on March 26th, 1788 referred to, quote, a young man drinking a glass of eggnog in some fashion. I guess that's not a quote. They just referred to that. So that term is even kind of hazy as well. We do know that eggnog was popular on both sides of the Atlantic, and it has proliferated to be popular really in many places. It's popular, of course, as we know, in the U.S. It's popular in the U.K., in the American South. Eggnog is typically, as we are here in New Orleans, it's typically made with bourbon, and that's an interesting sort of question as well, because eggnog was originally made probably with brandy or rum or something along those lines, the alcoholic version. But as we went through the American Revolution, due to sugar and rum becoming scarcer here, we started to use bourbon in the drink, and especially in the South, we started to use bourbon in the drink as a more affordable ingredient to put in it. There's a version in Puerto Rico that's gone on for some time. It's called Coquito. That's where rum and fresh coconut juice are also used in the preparation. There's a Mexican version of eggnog, also known as Rom Pope, and that was developed in Santa Clara, not Santa Clara, California, Santa Clara in Mexico. It differs from regular eggnog in its use of Mexican cinnamon and rum or grain alcohol. There's a version all the way down in Peru, and you might guess this if you know what the national spirit, if you will, of Peru is. Pisco. The drink is called Biblia con Pisco, and it is made with the, essentially, Pisco is kind of like a brandy in a sense that does it a little bit of, little disjustice. Well, we talked about that on the show, and we'll come back to Pisco again, but it is a grape distillate, and it's their version of eggnog. Biblia con Pisco is done with Pisco, of course. There's a German version. It's called Bier Soup, and it's made spelled B-I-E-R-S-U-P-P-E, Bier Soup. It is made with beer. They use eggs, a little bit of white wine, sugar, cloves, tea, lemon or lime juice, and cinnamon. There's all kinds of stuff and all kinds of variations. So we know that this drink has proliferated really throughout much of the Western world. And it's fascinating to actually kind of talk about this. Again, mentioning the fact that our version here in New Orleans typically features bourbon, again, has to do with the time during the Revolutionary War, as I mentioned, when we turned to domestic whiskey and bourbon in particular as a substitute for rum, which became scarcer. We talked about that, and it became tied to the holidays. It was adopted in the United States in the 1700s. We know that it was popular at that time because our first U.S. president served an eggnog-like drink, quote-unquote, eggnog-like drink to visitors. Now, his version included rye whiskey, rum, and sherry. So there is a bit of a record of President Washington's version of his, we'll say, booze-heavy eggnog, friends. The original recipe doesn't give us the exact number of eggs used, but cooks in his era, according to an article here in Time Magazine, estimated that about a dozen egg whites would do. What the recipe is, friends, is 1 quart cream, 1 quart milk, 1 dozen tablespoons sugar, 1 pint of brandy, 1/2 pint rye whiskey, 1/2 pint Jamaica rum, 1/4 pint sherry. So we're pretty much pulling in all the traditional spirits that we're talking about, maybe besides Pisco that I just mentioned, into this one beverage. You mix the liquor first, then you separate the yolks and the whites of the eggs, add sugar to the beaten yolks, mix well, add milk and cream, slowly beating. Beat whites of eggs until stiff and fold slowly into mixture. Let sit in cool place for several days. And my favorite part, friends, of the recipe, taste frequently.
I like that, to make sure that it tastes absolutely correctly. So again, eggnog, wow, man, who knew? Quite a bit of a complex history. Enjoy it as you like it. Enjoy it hot. Enjoy it cold. Enjoy it with bourbon. Enjoy it with rum. I definitely recommend that we enjoy it with something along those lines, a little bit of a spirit. Friends, come on back here to the NOLA Drink Show. We're going to talk a little bit more about something. Holidays. Come on back.
It is a place where history is made fresh daily. From the historic Upper Pontalba building on Jackson Square to the ever-evolving Farmers Market, our six-block district celebrates New Orleans food, music, and culture through events, festivals, walking tours, health and fitness classes, and also children's workshops at the New Orleans Jazz Park. Visit our calendar of events at www.frenchmarket.org. The French Market. Making history fun since 1791.
Are you looking for the best buns? Well, we have them at Bayou Burger in the Quarter. Wait till you bite into one of our acclaimed burgers like the Cowboy Burger, Tiebreaker Shrimp Burger, the world-famous Gator Burger, or you can build your own with endless combinations. It's all fresh meat, never ever frozen. Everywhere you look, there's big screen TVs where you'll never miss a minute of the action. Boasting the largest balcony dining in the French Quarter, you can watch all the action pass you by on the street. Find the best burgers in action at Bayou Burger. 501 Bourbon of St. Louis for the best buns on bourbon. It's Bayou Burger, baby.
Are you looking for a great place to enjoy great handcrafted and vintage cocktails? Victory is located at 339 Barone Street in the heart of downtown New Orleans. We have a variety of spirits, a talented team of bartenders, and great gourmet small plates. Our mission? To preserve an era when cocktails were made with artistry and pride. Grab your friends and come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. Give us a call to book your next private event or go to our website, victorynola.com. See you soon. Cheers.
Did you know that there's a vineyard and winery making quality table wines just 1 hour north of New Orleans? At Pontchartrain Vineyards, we produce award-winning wines from our 15-acre vineyard, as well as premium wine grapes sourced from the West Coast. Try our light, crisp, Louisiana-grown Blanc du Bois, or have a glass of Chardonnay, Zinfandel, or our Cab Syrah blend made right here in Louisiana. There's something for everyone at Pontchartrain Vineyards. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Hey, New Orleans, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy. Want a great alternative to Over Oak Chardonnay? Try Yamhill Valley Vineyards Pinot Blanc, a wonderfully balanced white wine from the oldest family estate in McMinnville, Oregon, in the Willamette Valley. It's round and ripe like a Chardonnay, but without the heavy oak and sweetness of big commercial corporate Chardonnays. Yamhill Valley Vineyard Pinot Blanc. A great value under $20. Ask for it wherever you buy wine. Cheers.
Hi, this is Kevin Richards with Sazerac Rye Whiskey. It's football and festival season, and there's no better way to enjoy Sazerac Rye than in a pothole cocktail. Just fill up a glass with ice and your favorite root beer, and add 2 ounces of Sazerac Rye for a truly tasty toddy. Named after the city's most iconic of inconveniences, the pothole is proof that New Orleans never takes itself too seriously. Sazerac Rye Whiskey. The way New Orleans does whiskey.
This is Christopher Icaza, general manager of Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street in the beautiful Vaucaray. We encourage you to come join us this fall and experience the renovation of one of the French Quarter's grand dames. Join us in our beautifully renovated Napoleon dining room. Come see our friend Paul Gustings at the beautiful Empire Bar. Experience one of the French Quarter's loveliest courtyards. That's Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street. Open 7 nights a week and every Sunday for brunch.
Hello, this is Ron Bartholomew, and to my great city of New Orleans, I'd like to introduce to you Touch Vodka. This artisan handcrafted ultra-premium vodka is uniquely distilled from Florida's finest wildflower honey and American grain. Touch also produces key lime, Valencia orange, and ruby red grapefruit selections that are infused with natural oils of locally sourced fruit, which results in a unique 80-proof vodka with no sugar added or coloring. Touch is now available at Doranax, Cello's, and the Corporation Grill and Bar, and many other locations across Louisiana. This holiday season, sit back and relax and enjoy Touch Vodka.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you, your host. Happy Thursday. Happy holidays. Thanks for tuning in. I hope everyone is enjoying holiday cheer and all of that good stuff. Hey, we continue in the holiday mode here on the show. That's how it's going to go. That's what we do. Wanted to get back to a couple things here on eggnog that I didn't quite get to. previously. Some of the information that I got was from an article a while back in Time Magazine talking about some of the origins and other things considered with eggnog. Excuse me. And I like what they say here at the end of the article. Enjoy your holiday cheer. Please drink responsibly. Not just for the alcohol, but also because of the calories. So eggnog these days, especially if you're doing the store-bought stuff, can pack in upwards of 400 calories per cup, friends. Yes, 400 pretty much empty sugar calories, right? And that's interesting too, because a lot of people might say, well, I don't really like eggnog. And purists would argue that you haven't really had the real thing. And so like if you make it yourself, where you separate the yolks and the whites and you do all this and you just add the requisite amount of sugar based on the spirit that you add and the spices that you add, it's going to be far less sugar. Here in the U.S., the Food and Drug Administration permits that eggnog sold in grocery stores and so on can actually have as little as 1% egg yolk. That's right, 1% egg yolk. So as this article says, this borders on quote unquote milk nog or egg flavoring. Not quite the same thing. The amount of sugar, friends, in the supermarket versions is incredibly high. So, you know, make it yourself. It's not too hard. A little bit of work. Got to whisk stuff and separate stuff and some things like that. Or go find just a better version. There are, of course, non-dairy versions out there, soy versions, so on and so forth. But, you know, don't just sort of chalk up eggnog and the traditional holiday beverage to buying that quart or half gallon at the grocery store with all that sugar, no real egg in it, and you know, pour a little bourbon in it and call it eggnog. If it floats your boat, great, but that's not really the real deal. Friends, we're coming up here on 2017, and as we know, prognostications, predictions, things that we think are going to happen next year are all over the place, and the trend continues. Hey, we're not immune to this. We're going to talk about it a little bit here on the show. And I'm sure that in the coming weeks here, both as we close out 2016 and move into 2017, we'll cover some of this stuff. But we're starting to see certain things and people making their predictions about what will happen in 2017 as far as drink trends go. There was a mildly interesting article in the Drinks Business yesterday, and they were quoting one of the big houses over there in the UK, Kingsford Drinks, and they do, they're an importer, they're a distributor, they're actually a producer, they bottle, they do all kinds of stuff. So they do have their finger on the pulse of the UK market and really, excuse me, the global market as well. And here is what I think, you know, and I'm going to highlight some of the stuff that they mention, this fellow Neil Anderson from Kingsland, but also, just sort of a little bit of common sense. I don't think we're going to see a whole lot of difference in a lot of these trends moving forward that we've seen in the past few years. I think it's pretty consistent in what's going on. A lot of these trends are pretty obvious. Uptick in certain things. One of those is that Prosecco, sparkling, bubbly continues to be a big thing. We're going to see that going on. I'll talk about this in a near future show about some of the specific numbers as it connects to Prosecco and sparkling. But it's one of the big areas. You know, wine is the large category here that we're talking about in a lot of ways. And Prosecco and sparkling will continue to be a major area of growth. Now, we are seeing Prosecco slip a little bit in market share. But this is really more an element of other sparkling wines coming into the market. You know, Cava's always been out there. New World sparkling wines, non-French sparkling Cremant, that sort of thing, into the marketplace at an affordable price point will continue to be a thing. That I don't think that's going away. Consumers love fizz, as we say. And, well, as this article says, innovation and carbonation will be a major area of growth for 2017. And that seems to make a lot of sense to me, friends. Population is going to be another one. This is something that we always talk about. Where is the buying power? Who has what to buy? Who are we marketing to? What is made to appeal to those people? We always want to, if we're in the production industry, we always want to appeal to those that are 55 and over. That's where a lot of the buying power is. That remains the same, but we do have a shifting demographic as we always do. Interestingly enough, there's not been, I think we know this, that Generation X, Generation Y, as we talk about, has not really stepped up to be that next one. A lot of beer drinking, I think, going on in that generation. a lot of people, marketers and so on and so forth, and I think maybe even overreaching on a certain level, are trying to appeal to millennials. With the trend with millennials, it seems that we're talking about broader product selection, meaning we're not beholden to these categories. And this is another thing that I think is worth talking about here, is that it was pretty simple 20, 25 years ago. Here are the categories. We had beer, we had wine, we had spirits, we had cider, whatever we had. Kind of easy to put you in a little box. Now we have all these crossover products. Now we have all these different things. We throw in the craft stuff, which we'll talk about in a second. But there's a lot of product choice out there. And it's kind of like, you know, not so much of I'm a beer drinker, I'm a wine drinker, I'm a this drinker. It's sort of what suits the occasion. And the millennial generation, I think, plays into that. I think a lot of us play into that now with basically the broadening of product offering out there on the market has driven, you know, there's innovation out there, but that's driven choice, that's driven awareness, and that kind of breaks down some barriers of what it is that we're actually looking for. And I think as we move forward into 2017, we're going to see more of the same that way, where it's not so much, I drink this, I just drink this. What am I drinking today? What is this occasion? What does this mean? We also throw in a little bit, I think, with the younger generation where we consider lower alcohol. Some of this, I think, is driven by lifestyle, meaning health, more balance. I think some of this may also be driven by rediscovery of certain liqueurs, wines from the old world, these things. And I'm talking, of course, very exclusively about a new world perspective of, you know, big, bold California wines, not so much de rigueur anymore, but, you know, finding these more food friendly, lower alcohol, old world wines, or those wines in the new world that are made in that style, appealing to that market. I think we're going to see that trend continue, friends, quite a bit. I think that that's, you know, pretty easy to tell. So again, we're talking about these sort of blurred lines of categories, lifestyle choices, you know, again, lower alcohol, also right drink for right occasion, playing into this. Digital stuff, friends, continues and will continue to be a major trend. I don't think this is any sort of earth-shaking consideration here about what we talk about that way. Storytelling as it goes on online, it goes on in social media, it goes on. We know this, if you're listening to the podcast in particular, or these things, we know that what we share with friends and things we like. And this to me also relates to conversations sitting at bars. We have these conversations and it's peer-to-peer direct connection, talking about something we like, we have a taste, we talk about it, we talk about why it works, why we like it, these sorts of things. I'm sorry if you're one of those people that holds on to traditional media, and I'm not going to debate traditional media versus social media here in this conversation, but that approach of this person, this dude, in mostly dudes in this consideration, coming from on high and saying this is a 95 point wine. Well, you might take that into consideration, but that's not the be all end all. What are your friends like? What are people drinking? Do you connect with the brand? Do you connect with the story? Some of that to me is a little bit smoke and mirrors. That's being played out on social media a little bit, connecting to the story, connecting to the brand. We've talked about that on this show, these sort of dusty origin stories about how great your family was 150 years ago that made this stuff in the face of all adversity, sort of bending, morphing, twisting history to work in the favor of your consideration. But that plays in too. But I think fundamentally what we're actually talking about is a situation that will continue as we move forward. I'm going to say this on the record, social media and these other considerations that allow us to connect with our peers, we're putting that into the equation. Okay, again, not the be all end all, but nor are the reviews in the magazines that we're talking about or some of these other things 95 point wines. It's only one variable in the equation. I don't see us getting away from that in 2017 or moving forward anytime soon. To me, the interesting thing is going to be, how does this storytelling, how do these connections, and how does information sharing actually take place? That to me is going to actually be the most interesting thing as it relates to drink trends, in 2017 and moving forward. Folks, coming back to the NOLA Drink Show, we're going to be back with a whole lot more. Come on back.
Oregon wines are taking over New Orleans. The reason? They're delicious. Next time you're shopping for wine, grab a bottle of Sass Wine. Located in the South Salem Hills of Oregon's Willamette Valley, Sass Wine produces small amounts of handcrafted, high-quality wines that include Pinot Noir, Pinot Blanc, Pinot Gris, Chardonnay, Riesling, Sauvignon Blanc, and Rosé of Syrah. A perfect balance of full fruit with fine, supple tannins and firm acidity is what makes truly great wines, and you'll find that in every bottle of Sass Wine you drink.
The Black Duck Bar is now open on the second floor of Dickie Brennan's Palace Cafe. Named in honor of the famous Black Duck Rum Runner, the bar features an extensive rum collection. Also noted for its small plates and charcuterie, the Black Duck Bar is sure to please. Join us for happy hour 4 to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday and try half-price draft beer, wine on tap, or a small plate. Stop by Palace Cafe at 605 Canal Street and try a delicious rum cocktail at the new Black Duck Bar.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region. Producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood, or our bold, rich Petit Sirah, excellent with steak, to our flagship Bordeaux-style blend, Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
Things are okay with me these days. Got a good job, got a good office. I got a new wife, got a new life, and the family is fine. Oh, lost touch long ago. You lost weight, I did not know. You ever look so nice after so much time.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Noel Drink Show here on WGSO 990 AM New Orleans. Brian Diaz here with you. Happy Thursday. Happy holidays. Thanks for joining us here on the show today. Thanks for joining us on the podcast, if that's how you're listening. I'll take that time to mention that right now, that the podcast is available on iTunes, Google Play Music, and TuneIn Radio. That is always posted. You can find it through our website, noladrinks.com, and it's always up by about midday on Friday. If you're listening to the radio show, you know the show's on because you're listening to it right now, so that's how you know. Thursdays, 3 to 5 p.m. Here on WGSO, and then again, the podcast of available the next day on Friday. We do the show once a week, so you can find it there. And and next week I've got a good show coming up. We're going to do a little bit of a live, well, sort of, we're going to pre-tape it, but we're going to do a little bit of a live broadcast from Bakery Bar, which is a cool, fairly new bar and restaurant. And they're tied in with Debbie Does Dauberge, which is a cake, Dauberge, a classic sort of cake basically from New Orleans, and they're common here, popular here. And the Bakery Bar ties in craft cocktails, good food, and Dauberge. And they do a service industry brunch that kind of caters to folks in the service industry from 11 to 1 on Tuesdays. And so every once in a while, we're going to drop ourselves in there and record our At the Bar segment just kind of on the fly. So we're going to record that next Tuesday, and that will air on the show next Thursday, and then the podcast thereafter. Couple of fun bits of news here in the world of beverage. A Chinese restaurant owner, this is from the Drinks Business publication, Chinese restaurant owner celebrates divorce with free beers. So this dude apparently in Nanchang, which is in southwestern Sichuan province of China, went through a long and bitter divorce, apparently. And the quote, there was a banner that was put, it's a hot pot style restaurant. The banner was put outside, obviously translated from Chinese, and says, our boss has successfully finalized his divorce, and he is in a very good mood. All the beers are free. Drink up. And the banner actually went so far as to feature a copy of his divorce certificate. So then he was interviewed by one of the local papers, and he said, I am indeed just divorced. This is his quote, because the divorce battle dragged on for too long, and I just finalized all the paperwork. I feel so relieved and wanted to celebrate through this promotion. That's what the owner told the paper. And he was dismissing that this was some sort of marketing hoax. And here's a bit of the kicker. People took him up on his offer. They went through, he did this on December 1st and 2nd. People went through 200 cases of beer. So the guy was pretty generous. He was obviously stoked about his divorce to part with 200 free cases of beer. And he also gave, it's an interesting number, 25% off. There's got to be some significance there, but it doesn't say, off all the food for those 2 days. Now, here's my favorite quote, is that the one of the government regulatory agencies, of which China obviously has a lot, the local industry and commerce bureau that regulates business activities, said the blatant promotion using divorce as a tool is something they would not recommend for future sales, but noted it's not against any regulations. So there you go. Free beer for everybody, and maybe kind of a win-win. The guy sold a lot of stuff. You know, and folks, this time of year, it's one of those things where, you know, it's the end of the year, we're coming into the new year, and everybody has their top 10 lists and top this and top that. And here on the NOLA Drink Show, we're not too big on top 10 lists per se. I don't like to do the kind of thing where we talk about, you know, top 10 restaurants or top bars to drink at now or something. That's just not our vibe. But there are some funny lists, and I came across some things today. And one of them, which it was referring to it as being a top 10, although there were only 8 items in the list. And it is 8 irritating habits of people in the wine trade. And being that I work in the wine trade, I found some of these to be pretty funny. The first one is projectile spitting. So, of course, you know, if you go to wine tastings and you're evaluating wine or you're judging wine or doing things like that, you're going to consume, potentially, if you drink everything, a lot of alcohol. And so people spit, and it's very common to spit and spit back into the spittoons that are there. But there are a lot of people that seem to kind of take it as an Olympic sport and see how far it seems that they spit. And I have been splattered more than once at different wine tastings. It's not a basketball hoop, friends. So your skill and your showmanship is really not all that necessary, but that's one, projectile spitting. Then on the opposite side of the coin there is people that don't spit at all. And I think, you know, the implication here is that if you're going to go taste a whole bunch of wines and you don't spit back, you're going to be kind of hammered halfway through the wine tasting and not really be an effective wine evaluator, perhaps. Now, for me, I think that kind of comes down to a little bit of what you got going on that day. So if I go to a wine tasting on a Monday afternoon and I'm not doing anything the rest of the day, I'm not spitting, man. I'm drinking all that stuff. But that's just me. And it depends, again, what you're doing that day. Getting back to the spittoon and where one does spit, lots of times you go to wine tastings, you go to tasting rooms and wineries, and it's kind of hard to know what's the spittoon and what's not the spittoon. I have seen this, friends, happen more times than I can actually tell you, where people either spit or dump into the water pitcher, because there's a water pitcher there for you to cleanse your palate or, you know, that sort of thing. They'll do that. You know, people make these mistakes quite often. We do want to make the spittoon obvious. Now, we don't want to make it super trashy looking, but we want people to know this is the dump bucket, this is the spittoon, and this is the water pitcher or something else. Now, a game that we used to always play when I used to run tasting rooms in California is that we would get, oftentimes bridal parties or bachelor parties would come in, mostly bridal parties, and, you know, we would be early in the day in the tasting room, and we would put somebody in the party up to this, that they do a pool of money, and they would try and get the bride or one of the other members of the party to drink from the dump bucket. Now, here's the thing, is that the money kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and we would say, I don't know if anybody spit back or not, or did they just dump? We don't know. We don't know. Now, of course, we would never have them actually drink if somebody had spit back and we knew if they did or they didn't. But it was always fun to see, like, somebody make $100 out of this. That was a good game, and we let them know what the spittoon was and where it was, and that it wasn't the water pitcher. Here's another one, folks. When you go to wine tastings, tasting table hoggers. This article here that I'm drawing some of this from talks about journalists being particularly bad about this. I can tell you, friends, going to lots of wine tastings, trade tastings here in New Orleans, that a lot of the folks from the restaurants are equally as bad. Apparently, I think when you go, you think that your wine list is the most important wine list in the whole world, and so you're going to stand there and sort of dominate the table as opposed to maybe getting a pour, getting a tidbit of information, and then step away, step back so that somebody else can get a pour. Then we can all sort of gather around and hear. It's really irritating, friends, when people aren't very nice about that. We get that at wineries as well, where people sort of hog at the tasting table. Don't step aside. Don't let those that are behind them actually step up and get a taste of wine. That's another one. Tasting crashers is one they list here. And this is, again, where sort of people kind of glum on, to going to a tasting when maybe they're not invited. Of course, people are pouring their product. Typically, it's free. And so, you know, hey, you bring your buddy along to drink for free. I'm not knocking that. I mean, why not? If you're drinking for free, come along. No big deal. Stingy pourers, friends. That's another one, too. You know, we want to evaluate the wine. We want to be able to have a taste. This is what this is really supposed to be about, right? We're talking about professional wine tasting and, you know, all this behavior. And we're kind of making fun of some of this stuff. But we are there, at least in theory, to evaluate the wines for our wine list, for our writing, whatever it is that we're talking about doing, you know, something that we want to carry in our restaurant or in our store. And, you know, you got to have, you don't need to pour a ton to be able to evaluate a wine, but, you know, that half ounce pour is really not going to cut it. Typically, I find that if I'm evaluating a wine, I need 3 to 4 sips because the first one really just kind of clears the palate, if you will, or regroups the palate, reboots the palate from what I just tasted before. And then, you know, I need a couple sips at least at that point to be able to, I think, fairly evaluate the wine and then move on to the next one. So if you're only giving me a one finger pour, sort of a half ounce pour, that kind of thing, that's not quite enough. So, you know, I'm not asking you to pour me a full glass. I'm just asking you to pour me something that allows me to evaluate the wine. There's also this one I find very funny, bottle hogs. And this is where people will come into a tasting, and what they'll do is they'll kind of go stick to a particular table or area that seems what they think has the best juice. So maybe you go to like where the expensive stuff is, or you go to stuff that's all the rave or something like that. And then you just hang out and just attach yourself to that table. And then by the time the tasting is halfway over, those bottles are gone. And again, people are writing these things out for samples and this sort of thing. And so if you run out, you run out often. So if you show up a little bit late, you don't get anything. So you get those folks, again, that just sort of say, I need a reevaluation. I need a confirmation pour. I'd like to revisit that wine. And they sit there and power through half the bottle. And then, you know, those of us who show up a little bit later don't get anything. Here's the last one on the list, which I also find very funny. And maybe this is the biggest complaint of all. We're talking about people who excessively swirl, excessively sniff, and are just generally pretentious with their wine. Wine, of course, friends, has been shared around the dinner table for millennia. It's supposed to be a casual thing. It's supposed to be an accessible thing. We break bread together. We drink together. We do this sort of thing. It's not this mystical thing. It's not magic. It's supposed to be fun. So those that sort of try and lord information over us or act like they have this sort of dance or routine where they swirl and swirl and swirl and sniff and sniff and sniff and just, you know, generally act cocky about their wine can be rather irritating. And, you know, sharing those sort of views on your wine, I think that's important. We want to share. I think it's great. We want to trade ideas. I think that's great too. But when, you know, I like what the line is here, when you're doing so, if it requires a dictionary and then a 3-minute soliloquy, that is a little bit too much, folks. So hey, there you go. A little bit, 8 things that can irritate us from the wine industry. Friends, coming back to hour number 2 of the Dine, Wine, and Spirits show, Nola Drinks Edition. My guests have arrived. Martha Wiggins from Sylvain, Alex Harrell from Angeline. We're going to talk about, I don't know, food, stuff, where they're from, what they do, how they are. Happy holidays, you guys. Thanks for coming in. Cool. Come on back.
Hi, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy, suggesting that great handcrafted Pinot Noir from Oregon doesn't need to be expensive. Consider Yamhill Valley Vineyard Estate Pinot Noir from the oldest family estate in the Willamette Valley of Oregon. It's rich, ripe, wonderfully balanced, and it's only about $20 at your favorite New Orleans wine shop. Yamhill Valley Vineyard. Top quality doesn't need to be expensive if you know what to drink. Ask for it wherever you buy wine. Cheers.
Looking to shake things up or find the bartender in you? We mean literally. At the New Orleans Drink Lab, you'll do just that. We teach you the history and tradition of classic New Orleans cocktails. Then you get behind the bar and make them. Master classes are fun, interactive, and hands-on. Great for small groups and team building. Come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. You mix, muddle, and master the art of cocktail making. Visit us at 343 Barone Street. Or go to our website. drinklabnola.com.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region, producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood, or our bold, rich Petit Sirah, excellent with steak, to our flagship Bordeaux-style blend, Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
With the season's beautiful weather, it's a perfect time to take a drive across Lake Pontchartrain and visit New Orleans' only local vineyard and winery, Pontchartrain Vineyards. Our tasting room is open Wednesday through Sunday from noon till 4, or by appointment. Come enjoy a flight of our wines in our classically styled French Provençal tasting room, or pack a picnic lunch and enjoy a bottle of wine on our patio overlooking the vineyard. While you're there, ask about our wine club. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Night before last, I got loaded on a bottle of whiskey.
Tim McNally. Welcome to the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show, NOLA Drinks edition. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the NOLA Drinks Show here on WGSO 990 AM New Orleans. Brian Diaz here with you on a Thursday. Happy holidays, everybody. Thanks for tuning into the show. Thanks for listening in on the podcast. If that's how you're hearing us, I appreciate it very much and wish you all the holiday cheer in the world. Pleased to be joined by two good friends who are my guests here for the second hour. Executive Chef of Sylvain, Martha Wiggins. Welcome, Martha.
Hi, Brian.
Hi, Martha. And Executive Chef slash owner of Angeline, Alex Harrell. Hi, Alex.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good, man. Thanks. Thanks for joining us. And it's really a lot of fun to have both of you here. I mentioned at the top of the show that we kind of do a regular feature on the show. You guys probably know this, that we bring in bartenders from sort of different establishments. And we call it At the Bar, and we just sort of talk bar talk stuff. This is the first time I've actually on the show had two chefs in. So we have to come up with another name because it's not really, I mean, I know you both like to sit at the bar, but it's not really at the bar. And I don't want to call it something like super trite, like in the kitchen, because that's kind of stupid. But so we'll think about that during the course of the hour of what we call this stuff here.
Okay.
But it's really cool having you guys here. And I think it's fun. You both have a personal connection in that, Alex, you were the opening executive chef at Sylvain, where Martha is now the executive chef.
Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're best friends.
And now you're best. So okay, let's go that way right out of the gate. Then so Martha, you worked as Alex's sous chef.
Yeah.
For how long was that? 4 years? 5 years?
4 years. Yeah.
Yeah. Almost 4 years.
Almost four years. Okay. And how did y'all get along in the kitchen?
I'd say fabulously. For a nice balance of a lot of things. I definitely got to be bad cop because he is good cop, and I've worked best as bad cop. So
okay, so you took on the role of bad cop, so Alex could be the shiny lovely guy, and then you were kind of the ball breaker there.
Yeah, she was definitely the hammer.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Let Martha go deal with that.
Yeah.
Well, so that worked good. And then, Alex, and you have now opened your own place, which Angeline, we're going to get into all this stuff over the course of the hour. And then it was kind of neat, Martha, because then you, as opposed to having to maybe go elsewhere, you were promoted from within to become executive chef at Sylvain.
Yes. Sorry.
There you go. Correct. Right up there on the mic. Yep.
Yeah, that was 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago.
Yeah.
I have no sense of time.
That's all right. Well, it kind of warps when you're there all the time,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, since that day, I don't know how long it's been or how long it had been.
Yeah, and it's going great. I like what you put out of that kitchen.
And well, thank you.
Absolutely. And Alex, I love what you do too. And Alex, tell us a little bit about where you're from and a little bit about your background, you know, just in general in the culinary world. And then we'll get into Angeline a little bit too, and we'll kind of flip back and forth.
Okay. I grew up in Dothan, Alabama, which is in the far southeastern corner of the state. It's about 19 miles from Georgia and 19 miles from Florida.
Okay.
And so close enough to the Gulf Coast that spent a lot of time back and forth going there. And so moved to New Orleans in, I think it was 1998. Somewhere around that time.
And where did you start working when you got here?
I started working at Biona.
Oh, you did?
Okay. Yeah, for Chef Spicer.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And did you study culinary arts in school, or how did you get involved?
No, I actually never intended to cook as a profession. I've got a degree in biology, and I was pursuing medicine and thought that was the path that I wanted to go into. I had plans of going to medical school and following that. And somewhere along the way, I took a decided kind of left turn and wound up in kitchens. And it started for me as a summer job and working back in on the Gulf Coast in Florida for a summer for a family friend that was opening a restaurant. And real simple mom and pop kind of fried seafood family style restaurant. And one thing I kind of realized that I enjoyed the work in the kitchen. I enjoyed the camaraderie. I enjoyed the physicality of it, and actually, you know, the work itself, being involved and seeing product come in and go out as finished, you know, plates for people. Mm-hmm. And kind of pursued it from there.
Cool. And I didn't know about the bio stuff. Now, you went to University of Alabama, right?
I did postgraduate work.
You did postgraduate?
At University of Alabama, yeah.
Oh, in bio. Okay.
Yeah. I've got my undergraduate degree from Hampton-Sydney College in Virginia.
Got it. Okay. Yep. Interesting. So what do you think about, it's the Peach Bowl? Is that the Peach Bowl? Is that the semifinal?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I know you're vested because I see you wear the cap.
Yes.
So, Martha, do me a favor. So we're talking about a little bit about your background. Now, you grew up on the mid-Atlantic, right? On the East Coast?
I grew up in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. in Adams Morgan, and lived there till I was about 20, then moved to New Bedford, Massachusetts, where I lived for about 4.5 years before I came to New Orleans.
And what got you then into the culinary world?
When I was in D.C., I worked as at a deli called Pumpernickel's. And I started, I think I was 15 at the oldest, as a bagel runner, and I would run bagels up and down the stairs. And then they eventually promoted me to counter work. And this place was just one of these really, really busy neighborhood spots where the line was always wrapped around the store. And it was just constant push. And I think that at that time, even though I had no idea I was going to end up cooking professionally, I did get kind of addicted to that adrenaline rush and that, sink or swim mentality, or like, am I going to make it? And like, oh, yes, we made it. And I was like, that got hooked on that there. Then I went, so that's definitely where I learned. That's definitely where I got, I think I'd say I got my start. Then I went to, moved to New Bedford with my mother and ended up attending Bristol Community College to get my associate's in culinary arts. Didn't expect that, wasn't planning on it, but it was kind of like, you need to do something, and the only thing I knew how to do at that time was cook. And after dropping out of high school and then moving, I needed to make a move, and so I did that, and it was a really excellent decision. While I was there, I also cooked in restaurants, and then I came here, and I moved to New Orleans with no job and no place to live, and stayed with a friend for a while, and there was an ad on Craigslist for a restaurant called Sylvain that was opening, and they needed one more cook. So I sent Alex an email and told him, like, I think in our interview, I remember telling you how, talking myself down pretty bad, like, I didn't know anything, but I could learn, and I would work hard, and you didn't have to pay me very much, and nobody should ever say that.
No, right.
But I did.
Well, that's, yeah. I mean, that's what got you hired.
That's what got me the job.
Yeah, especially I didn't have to pay very much part of that.
Yeah.
That's a big thing.
Yeah, well, she was the last person I hired for the staff, for the kitchen staff. And is the only person left from that original kitchen staff.
That's funny.
So it is pretty funny.
That's amazing. Yeah. Well, let's do this, you guys. We're going to take a quick break here on the show, and let's come back. We'll come back and we'll talk a little bit about Sylvain and how you kind of both got there, ended up there. Talk a little bit more about your backgrounds. And I want to talk about style of cuisine. And I think we'll before the end of the show, too, besides talking about your establishments, let's talk a little bit about holiday table stuff, if you guys are good with that, too.
Cool.
Folks, coming back to the Noel Drink Show here on WGSO 990 AM, New Orleans.
Hi, I'm Dickie Brennan, and I'd like to invite you to our new Black Duck Bar, located on the second floor of Palace Cafe. Rum is the chosen spirit of Palace Cafe's Black Duck Bar and features an extensive rum collection from all over the world. Be sure to join us for happy hour Monday through Friday, 4 to 6 p.m., with half-price small plates, local draft beer, and tap wine. Look forward to seeing you soon at Palace Cafe's new Black Duck Bar.
Hey, ladies. Are you looking for wine to bring to your next girls' night out? Grab a bottle of Capitello Wines and enjoy the taste of fruit from Oregon's Willamette Valley. Capitello has a wide variety of wines to choose from. Sauvignon Blanc, Pinot Noir, dessert wine, and a Brut Sparkling that's a blend of Pinot Noir and Chardonnay. He'll even stop by next time he's in town. So grab the girls, have fun, and enjoy Capitello Wine. Cheers.
Are you looking for a great place to enjoy great handcrafted and vintage cocktails? Victory is located at 339 Barone Street in the heart of downtown New Orleans. We have a variety of spirits, a talented team of bartenders, and great gourmet small plates. Our mission? To preserve an era when cocktails were made with artistry and pride. Grab your friends and come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. Give us a call to book your next private event or go to our website, victorynola.com. See you soon. Cheers.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the NOLA Drinks Show. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for tuning in, chatting with my friends and chefs Martha Wiggins and Alex Harrell, Martha of Sylvain and Alex of Angeline. And as we were talking about in the previous segment, this is the connection here, is that Alex opened and helped open Sylvain as the executive chef. And we've just learned that Martha was the last kitchen hire there at Sylvain. And now you are the hammer. Now you are the boss lady.
Yes, last kitchen hire, but I was there from day one.
You were there from day yes. one. And there are very few, pretty much just you,
yes,
right?
Now besides that Darren abandoned me, it yeah. is just me.
Yeah.
Original crew.
Yeah. Lone, and I'm, go
lone,
ahead,
I was going to say lone survivor.
Yeah.
Yeah, the lone survivor.
And the ghost.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, you and the ghost.
have been there. Yeah. She's been there for a long time.
And Almanaster, right?
Yeah.
Where the offering is, yeah, of
yeah.
course.
I guess, yeah.
Yeah, and actually, now that we've had Darren on the show a few times and a good friend of the show, a good personal friend of ours, and he's moved on to, who's running the bar and the beverage program there, moved on to Austin. And actually, I tell the story often, and you guys will both appreciate this because you were there at the time. One of my very favorite moments at Sylvain or memories at Sylvain was the first Mardi Gras that y'all were open.
Oh, God.
And it was before the restaurant. I mean, you know, it was getting good press and it was popular, becoming popular. But I don't think people even knew that, you know, it was going to be open on Mardi Gras.
Right.
And so I wander in there. It was about 10:30, 11 o'clock in the morning. And it's one of the previous owners who was partnered with Ro LeBlanco, I know, is listening right now because we're getting text messages hazing us about the show. Hi, Ro. And it was but one of his previous partners who was involved now no longer, Sean McCusker, was in there. And Darren, that we're talking about, and one other regular, an older guy that I saw maybe the first couple of years y'all were open, and then I've never seen him since. And it was just four of us for like 3 hours.
Yeah.
And Sean had come up with this drink that was, and you guys will remember the name. I always forget what it is. It's the shot of Jack Daniels with the Bailey's back.
The extreme fancy or super fancy.
Yeah, or fantasy something. Something fantasy. Like fancy. Fantasy something. Okay.
Super fancy. Extreme
yes,
fancy.
That one. And so we had about 35 of those, I think, one morning. And then people started to actually file in. But it was cool. And now that place has changed considerably. And Alex, so when you got involved there with Sylvain, let me back up just a little bit. So you were going to go into biology and you were thinking about medical school. And then you mentioned cooking on the Gulf Coast in Florida. So you're kind of more or less self-taught then moving forward, right? Working with people and
yeah,
working. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, no formalized culinary school training. So it's basically been on the job and having people scream and yell at me until I got it right in the very beginning.
Right.
You learn quickly in those kind of environments, and it's more about self-preservation. It's like, well, if I do this way, they don't scream at me. If I do it that way, they do. So I'm going to
go that way.
Yeah, I'm going to opt for the other one. It's like the path of least resistance. And then eventually I learned, technique and things like that. It starts to, you start to invest yourself a little bit more and acquire more skill and more knowledge.
And bring vision to the table and that sort of thing.
Yeah, and you just keep working at it.
Now, so you, when you moved here, Alex, then did you immediately start working at Bayona for Spicer? Or
yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you hired as a line cook or?
Yeah, I honestly, I'm to this day, and I've never actually asked Chef this, why she hired me. Because I had absolutely no experience. And I was just fortunate enough, you know, to be able to talk my way into a job there. I started plating desserts, which is in at the time in the kitchen at Bayona was about as low as you could get because you didn't You didn't cook anything. I picked herbs for garnish, and I put desserts on the plate. And so that was my introduction into a French Quarter kitchen in New Orleans.
Wow! So get that right, Grasshopper, and then we give you something else.
Right? Then they'll trust you with, you know, actually doing some stuff. Yeah.
That's really interesting. And you guys said something too that I find really fascinating, that there's the sort of adrenaline rush. And I waited tables for a little while, but I'm not, you know, that's the limit of my experience. And you kind of always find it almost reminds me of like a sports game. Every time you pull a shift, you sort of come in, there's this struggle or the end game that you're trying to achieve, and then you close for the day, and then you kind of feel like you've sort of gone to battle with your peers, and then you've survived it, and then we're going to come back and play the game the next day. Is that kind of an accurate way to put it?
Yeah, I'd say so. It's definitely, it's like that. It reminds me sometimes around the holidays, I was saying, it reminds me of school. It's like, you know, gets to the end of the weekend, you know, and Christmas is coming, and we're like, yay, you know. But it definitely has builds that camaraderie when you go through something as horrible as working in a kitchen and through a busy service, and you know, you can come out at the end of it and go have a drink together. It's a good feeling, and it really makes, you know, the people we've worked with, any of us, I'm sure anybody who works in a kitchen, they remember everybody they ever worked with.
Yeah, you do.
You have a bond that you won't have with anybody else.
Yeah.
And people's personalities come out, right? I mean, it's inevitable. It's sort of not like you
the
can
bad
show
part
up and sit
of
in
their
your
personality.
Yeah, you get everything, right? The good, the bad, and the ugly.
Yeah,
absolutely. And it's something that, you know, you realize that you're not alone in the kitchen, you know, that you're there with other people and they're going through the same thing. They might be having, you know, whether it's, you know, struggling through the same difficult circumstances where, you know, it might be a hard service, or you're celebrating and having fun with a service that that's been relatively stress free and you've had success with. You kind of grow very connected and kind of tight with those people because you depend on them. You know, mm-hmm. it's not one person doing it. And even in the role of chef owner, I can't, at Angeline, nothing happens in that restaurant without other people who are dedicated. And, you know, so if you think you can do it by yourself, you're sorely mistaken.
Yeah, you just need to go serve Lucky Dogs then on the street somewhere.
Yeah, you're just not going to be successful.
Right. And that's a great point, Alex. And because it's maybe you guys... an analogy, I'm going to stick with the sports analogy since we're talking about the Peach Bowl in Alabama and other things. Sort of like, you know, you guys are like the quarterbacks, and then but it's still a team sport that we're talking about here.
Absolutely. I don't understand any of your sports analogies.
I'm sorry. So it's sort of like, because you're, and I was going to mention this too, so your dad is a blues musician on the East Coast. We know that. So it's sort of like you got the band leader, and then you got everybody in the band.
Okay.
And the song doesn't come off right if everybody in the band's not doing what the band's supposed to do.
Yeah. Right. Martha enjoys sports ball.
So. Yeah. Part of me and Alex's relationship or I guess, you know, is constantly fighting about, or him talking about football and me walking away.
That is.
Or making a really loud noise when he's talking about football with other people around me.
Yeah. It's mostly an exasperated sound.
Yeah.
And then she rolls her eyes.
It's a really loud sigh. And then I storm
she's
out
like,
of the room.
You little boys talk about your foosball. And I'm going to go do some other things.
Smash pans.
I'm going to have to, one of the questions I had for you that I'm going to have to put away then, as I was going to ask you to give us the prediction on the semifinal of Alabama versus Washington in the Peach Bowl. But
well, I always say roll tide because I don't really know what it means. But I know that it means something to him and I love him. But that's about the extent of. I have no predictions.
That's really nice. Okay, well, then go with Alabama, and you'll make Alex happy.
Roll Tide.
Roll Tide. That's all. There you go. Well, and you got. So we're talking a little bit too about in the kitchen thing, and I think if people here in New Orleans are going to know this, if you go out and you dine in the French Quarter and some of these other places, older parts of town, if you're listening to the podcast, or maybe you're from out of town, you may not know this. An older city. In the case of Sylvain, where you all worked, it's sort of a crucible in more ways than one. We're talking about team, but that's not a big kitchen. That's a small kitchen.
Yeah, it's tiny.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's very close. It's very hot. It's not as hot as it used to be.
You guys have better air conditioning in there?
Yeah, you know.
Yeah, everything improved.
Everything is better.
Everything improved when I left. They got a walk-in, they got a prep space, they got more AC in the kitchen, they bigger staff.
Well, it really built character, Sylvain did in its early years.
Yeah.
I think I have too much character now.
There you go.
It's a little much.
It's like in Spinal Tap when they say too much perspective. Can't have too much perspective. Friends, and they actually say another word in there that I can't say on the radio. We're talking about the words we can't say on the radio. It's
I'm
one of the seven
really
words.
I'm focusing really hard on that.
Yeah, and you're doing a great job. You want me to put the list in front of you, Martha, so you can, the George Carlin?
Something bad's going to happen.
Folks, come on back here to the Noel Drink Show. We're chatting with Chef Martha Wiggins from Sylvain, Chef Owner Alex Harrell of Angeline. Come on back.
Do I feel high?
Hey, New Orleans, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy. If you're listening to this show, you love good food and good wine. And a great wine with our plentiful fresh Gulf seafood is the Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc, a crisp, balanced white blend from the south of France. Whether it's with fresh oysters, crab, redfish, or shrimp, this Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc will not disappoint. And it's a great value at around $14. Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc. Cheers.
Hi. This is Kevin Richards with New Orleans' own Sazerac Company, makers of Sazerac Rye Whiskey. In case you haven't noticed, rye whiskey is hot, flying off store shelves and dominating the bar scene in New Orleans and around the country. Rye's spicy and assertive character is drawing in those looking for whiskey with a bite, but that equally pairs well with cocktails. Enjoy it in cocktails like the Old Fashioned or Manhattan, or simply savor it on the rocks. Sazerac Rye Whiskey, the way New Orleans does whiskey.
This is Christopher Icaza, General Manager of Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street in the beautiful Vaucare. We encourage you to come join us this fall and experience the renovation of one of the French Quarter's Grand Dames. Join us in our beautifully renovated Napoleon Dining Room. Come see our friend Paul Gustings at the beautiful Empire Bar. Experience one of the French Quarter's loveliest courtyards. That's Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street. Open 7 nights a week and every Sunday for brunch.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region, producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood, or our bold, rich Petit Sirah, excellent with steak, to our flagship Bordeaux-style blend supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
The French Market is open daily with pop-up fresh markets on Wednesdays and Saturdays. The Crescent City Farmers Market is at the French Market each Wednesday, rain or shine, from 2 to 6 p.m. On Saturdays from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., find new and different vendors offering everything from fresh bagels to fresh herbs. Vendors change weekly depending on weather and seasons, so check them out often. Visit frenchmarket.org for a list of farmers market vendors, chef demonstrations, live music, and special events.
Are you looking for the best buns? Well, we have them at Bayou Burger in the Quarter. Wait till you bite into one of our acclaimed burgers like the Cowboy Burger, Tiebreaker Shrimp Burger, the world-famous Gator Burger, or you can build your own with endless combinations. It's all fresh meat, never ever frozen. Everywhere you look, there's big screen TVs where you'll never miss a minute of the action. Boasting the largest balcony dining in the French Quarter, you can watch all the action pass you by on the street. Find the best burgers in action at Bayou Burger. 501 Bourbon at St. Louis for the best buns on bourbon. It's Bayou Burger, baby.
Springtime in New Orleans is beckoning us back on our front porches, favorite patio bars, and restaurants. Dickie Brennan's Tableau offers some of the best outdoor dining in the French Quarter. Soak in the beautiful weather on the balcony overlooking Jackson Square or by the whispering fountain in the cozy courtyard. Tableau also offers an amazing happy hour from 2 to 6 p.m. every day of the week, offering half-price beer and wine on tap, $5 classic cocktails, and discounted small plates. For menus, reservations, and more, visit TableauFrenchQuarter.com. Tableau is located at 616 St. Peter Street.
Did you know that there's a vineyard and winery making quality table wines just 1 hour north of New Orleans? At Pontchartrain Vineyards, we produce award-winning wines from our 15-acre vineyard, as well as premium wine grapes sourced from the West Coast. Try our light, crisp, Louisiana-grown Blanc du Bois, or have a glass of Chardonnay, Zinfandel, or our Cab Syrah blend made right here in Louisiana. There's something for everyone at Pontchartrain Vineyards. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you on WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans.
pleased to be joined by Martha Wiggins from Sylvain, Alex Harrell from Angeline. And so we've talked a little bit about your shared background, how y'all worked together and came together at Sylvain. So then, Alex, what about where we had about 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, you took the plunge and opened your own place. Is that right? Is that about timelines right?
Yeah, I left, I guess it was 2014.
Okay, yeah.
I think it was November of 2014. Mm-hmm. And then opened Angeline March of 2015.
And you do a great job there, and it's like one of my favorite places in the city to go. We just saw you for brunch not too long ago.
Yeah,
and absolutely, man. And that was excellent. And I'll note, by the way, because I saw this on Facebook yesterday, it was a Thrillist, I guess, named you the New Orleans Chef of the Year, right?
Yeah, they did. I'm still kind of speechless and blown away.
I didn't know
with that. Yeah.
That's great.
Check Facebook
often. Yeah, I should check that. Wow, I didn't know that you were.
Yeah. Or maybe text me or call me or something.
Know. Yeah, you know, you guys can still be friends and you can still be happy for
we
Alex
are friends.
Martha. You can hit like on the Facebook post.
I don't know. I didn't know that. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
You know, I think you're the best.
Martha, I even shared that on the NOLA Drinks Facebook page, which so you're sort of doubling down on being bad. You didn't know that from Alex, and apparently you don't see my stuff either.
I deleted Facebook off my phone.
Oh, you did.
After events that took place in the election.
Oh, that's right. We had this conversation. I remember this now a few weeks ago. Okay. Anyway, so
moving on.
Yes, moving on. So let's talk a little bit, Alex, about Angeline. Kind of bringing a more of a pan-Southern cuisine, I think. Is that a fair way to describe it?
Yeah, it's basically kind of a commingling of my experiences with food and kind of flavors and ingredients that I had when I was growing up in South Alabama and Northwest Florida, and kind of more traditionalized Southern food. And then my professional experiences here in kitchens in New Orleans, with, kind of a heavy, Northern Mediterranean influence. So a little bit of Italian, provincial French, Spanish, influence, mm-hmm. that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. And it's fantastic. And I say this to people all the time because I like talking, both of your establishments are two of my very favorite places in the city or anywhere, period. We had dinner with you, Alex. This was probably last year, and that is still the best duck confit that I have ever had.
Thank you.
Yes, queen.
It's so good. I spent a lot of time in France and stuff like that, and that is just absolutely fantastic what you do.
Thank you. Yeah, that's one of those recipes that you kind of hit on as a chef, and you know that once you it comes along kind of so rarely that once you latch onto it, that you know it works and it's foolproof and you can put it on and people enjoy it. And that's one of my go-tos.
And it's a winner. It's an absolute winner.
Yeah, it's just, for me, it works and the guests at the restaurant enjoy it. So.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's wonderful. And Martha, so they're at Sylvain, you inherited a kitchen that had, obviously Alex's fingerprints on it, and then, some other aspects of with ownership and some things like that. How would you describe the food there? And then maybe tell us, I start to see more and more of your stamp being put on that menu every time I eat there.
There are certain things, when I worked for Alex, my job, or what I always made my job was, as sous chef, was to interpret his vision, and I became very good at that. Just I knew what he would be okay with, or what he would like, or what he wouldn't like. It was very clear cut and easy for me to see after working with him for a while. So that, and being that we started that together, he started that, those things became very Sylvain. And so I remember, so it was easy for me, because I understood what we could get away with or not get away with at the restaurant to stay, stay consistent and still have an intention and a vision in our food. Sorry, I'm getting off topic.
No,
I'm trying not to
it's
swear.
Okay. And you know what I mean? And again, it's always tough because I'm never a big fan of trying to make people be in little boxes
uh-huh.
about what they, what the food is described as this. One of the terms that's always applied to Sylvain, I see often in the media these days, is that newly coined term gastropub. And for some reason, I'm not a big fan of that term. I think it kind of, to me, it kind of undermines both sides of the bar program being mistreated and also mistreating the kitchen program a little bit too. It seems to kind of dumb both sides down with the term. That's just my view.
Yeah, at first I, you know, kind of was always like, oh, who told you it was a gastropub? But then people just have been saying that for 6 years now, so I don't really mind anymore. But, you know, I think that I've just grown up in that kitchen. So, you know, I grew up with Alex. I was mentored, and my, you know, my knowledge and my skills were, you know, nurtured by him, and I was given the ability to try things and mess things up and, you know, learn from my own mistakes, because he was, you know, he didn't have that ego where he wouldn't let me try. And he gave me the freedom to do my own thing. And I think that is where my, you know, my skill went to more talent, and I was able to, you know, realize that, oh, I did have actually kind of my own interpretation of these dishes or so on and so forth. But
yeah, and do you find that that's, and this is a really great point, because I think that there's obviously more than one way that people can work, and what Alex, you've done is you trust people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, trust is a big thing, and it allows growth, it allows expression, trial by fire, like we're talking about, trial by error, like we're talking about. Mm-hmm. Do you find, Martha, that you're kind of becoming more and more comfortable in your own skin every day? Do you feel like you're there? Is this, I mean, I guess it's an ever evolving
process, is. It always is. Every holiday or every, you know, New Year, I think, oh God, I remember last New Year, and the New Year before after he left was like nightmarish. And, you know, it's a constant evolution of myself. And I realized, God, I've been in this building for 6 years and it doesn't feel like that. You know, what was your question again?
Just sort of being more comfortable in your own skin, and finally you're putting more of your own imprint on this moving forward.
Yeah. And it's happened very organically, like I said, because Alex was so, you know, he was just confident in my ability when I didn't really have confidence in my ability. You know, I was just trying to do what he wanted and do right by him. So in doing so, it's been organic with me and my line cooks to just continue to create things that we want to do, things we're interested in, try things. I do feel a lot more comfortable in my own skin. I mean, I have no choice but to
trial by fire,
be okay
right?
with this
swim.
Right now, because it's happening. It's still happening. So
all the time.
So I guess I'm doing okay.
Yeah, you're doing fantastically. Alex, with Angeline, now when you then moved on and opened your own place, that's got to be kind of a daunting task, right? I mean, to take that plunge and say, this is going to be my vision, and you know, like we're talking about team and all that, but this is your place and you've taken that step forward.
Yeah, it was, I mean, obviously, I kind of half jokingly say to people, you know, besides having children, it's been the most thrilling thing that I've ever done. It's also the most terrifying thing that I've ever done, because you quickly realize it's so much more than, as a chef, managing a kitchen and managing food and dealing with food. You have to take ownership of everything.
Everything, yeah.
So it's vendor relations and banking and, you know, tax structures and
Yelp,
you know, all just every everything, guest experience.
Right.
Yeah. You really have to take an ownership in all of it. And you can't do that, or you can't be, at least I can't. I can't do it, and I can't be comfortable doing it without having good people and working with really, really talented people. And, you know, that was one thing kind of coming back with the first conversation that I had with Martha in an interview when I was hiring her for Sylvain. I knew she had it. Like, I knew she was capable of doing it. And so I never doubted her ability. It was just getting her comfortable and getting her to kind of find that
her voice,
and her voice, and her confidence in herself. Mm-hmm. Because I knew that no matter what, she wasn't going to fail. She wasn't going to let herself fail, and she always took responsibility for everything, and ownership of everything. So even if it was a mistake, she took ownership in it. And mm-hmm. you have to do that. That's how you grow, and that's how you become a leader. That's how you become someone that people want to follow. And she did that, and it was kind of organic for her. I don't know if she saw it the way I did, but you know, it was easy. You know, when the time came and I started talking to Robert about sous chefs, because we opened Anchelon or Sylvain without a sous chef, she was number one, and I knew she could do it, and I knew she had to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and that's a good thing. We talk about the company LeBlanc Smith that owns Sylvain and Mobar Barrel Proof and Cavan there uptown. Always very good about, especially in recent years, about hiring from within and promoting,
right?
Finding those things and promoting from within, which I think is a really neat thing. Well, you guys, let's do this. Let's take a break here, and then we're going to come back. Let's talk we'll talk a little bit about the holiday table, because we haven't quite gotten that far yet. And then we're going to circle back where we actually tell people where they can come find you two and eat and drink with you with all this yummy stuff that y'all make and serve us. Folks, come on back. Right on. Come on back.
Looking for a bottle of wine to impress your friends and family? Miro Cellars from California's Russian River Valley is the perfect wine for any occasion. Miro Cellars searches the region for the finest grapes to make their one-of-a-kind specialty wines. Award-winning winemaker Miro Chelikov considers the particular geology and seasonal climate of each vineyard when selecting the most interesting grapes the region has to offer. Because Miro has complete freedom to make precisely the wines he loves best, the results are spectacular. Let yourself in on one of the best-kept secrets in wine today. Miro Cellars.
Hi, I'm Dickie Brennan, and I'd like to invite you to our new Black Duck Bar, located on the second floor of Palace Cafe. Rum is the chosen spirit of Palace Cafe's Black Duck Bar and features an extensive rum collection from all over the world. Be sure to join us for happy hour Monday through Friday, 4 to 6 p.m., with half-price small plates, local draft beer, and tap wine. Look forward to seeing you soon at Palace Cafe's new Black Duck Bar.
Time for lunch? We've got you covered at Sobu.
Chef Juan Carlos whipped up special two-course lunches that start at $14.
Try our Creole Cuban sandwich and pair it with a bowl of our gumbo.
Of course, Sobu's full menu is also available.
And don't forget Sobu's version of Commander's Palace 25-cent martinis.
Available Monday through Friday, 11:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m.
Join us at Sobu for our speedy lunch at 310 Charter Street in the Quarter.
Complimentary parking next door at the W Hotel.
Sobu, life is meant to be lived, not endured.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show here on WGSO 990 AM New Orleans. Brian Diaz here with you. Happy holidays, everybody. Pleased to be chatting with my friends Martha Wiggins from Sylvain and Alex Harrell from Angeline. And you guys, I just wanted to share. I got our good friend Ro, Ro LeBlanc, who owns Sylvain, just sent me a really nice text. He said, Sylvain wouldn't have made it without Alex, no doubt in anyone's mind that that's the case. And we would not be the amazing restaurant we are now without Martha. She's so much more than just a chef now. She leads the entire restaurant. So nice text for both of you guys.
Oh, and, that's awesome.
Yeah, really nice to hear. And glad that Ro's still listening. Hopefully he's got a 12-pack of Budweiser or something like that on him, because, well, that's a side story. But yeah, so you guys, let's talk real quickly here. And then I want to, you know, make sure we get to the establishments where people can find you. Anything big on the holiday table that we're thinking about here? New, exciting, what you're all going to eat, what you're going to serve, anything along those lines?
Actually, I just started thinking about that today. For the first time that I can remember, definitely since my daughters were born, it will just be the four of us. So,
oh, wow.
Other family are away visiting aunts and cousins and other siblings and things like that. So it's just going to be, my wife and I and our daughters, and I'm not sure what we're going to do. Typically it's pretty low key for us, on Christmas, especially Christmas Day. Mm-hmm. Maybe a gumbo, something like that. Something simple.
Just kind of easy, something to throw on the stove and not think about it too much.
Yeah.
Yeah. That sounds good. What about you, Martha?
At the restaurant, we'll be doing a couple specials on Christmas Eve and then on New Year's. I think I'm going to make gumbo on Christmas Eve, duck gumbo. But home, I mean, I think I'm probably going to wind up cooking, even though I've kind of stressed to death that I don't want to do that. and probably, if I want to eat, I'm going to end up doing it, which won't. Well, anyway, I have no idea.
That's a good answer.
I've only, you know, tried to work on stuff at the restaurant, and thus far I've gotten to duck gumbo. And
Well, we got the common gumbo theme going on, which is obviously we're talking about New Orleans and Christmas time, so that works great.
Yeah,
I guess that's a thing here.
That is a thing here. Gumbo. Absolutely. Yeah. Gumbo. Any time of year really works. Well, and what are we seeing, guys, right now, sort of seasonal stuff? I know you guys like to pull in local whenever you can. Anything kind of good that we're seeing that's either new or exciting or just looking real good these days?
Just as far as like seasonal product goes, getting a lot of like braising greens, mustard greens, collards, kale, Swiss chard, stuff like that. Local citrus is all over the menu at Angeline.
Yeah.
From Satsuma.
Satsuma, ruby grapefruit, some Meyer lemon. Those kind of things. So we're playing with a lot of that stuff. I just changed the menu about a week and a half ago.
Oh,
and
okay.
So kind of seasonalized it a little bit and changed up some of the presentation and some of the plating and some of the ingredients. We tend to do that. We'll have large kind of seasonal changes 5-6 times a year. And then within those periods, we kind of micro change, whether we get tired of cooking something or maybe it's not as well received by the guest as we want it. So we'll change it at that point. But it's always ingredient driven. So you're seeing a lot of root veg and that sort of stuff. The real hearty kind of winter vegetables.
Brassicas.
Brassicas.
I learned that. Yeah, I know that word.
It's a fancy word.
That is a fancy word.
Alex definitely, instilled that in me the, using as close to all local ingredients as possible. It was just second nature to him to use things, you know, that were farmed locally or close to it. And it's, you know, just become now habit of mine where it's like, you know, it's not something that really needs to be advertised or talked about. It's just how it should be. And he definitely taught me, you know, how to, you know, make things up on the fly and or to come up with specials based on what was delivered to your door that day. So I definitely thank him for making me, you know, realize how important that is and that I can continue to support that, and again, without necessarily advertising it, just kind of making it commonplace.
Well, and that's got to be the fun thing, right, you guys, is that, I mean, you know, you see something that somebody brings, you know, you get some nice local produce, this looks great, and then that's got to drive inspiration, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it does, without a doubt. I mean, for me, that's where most of my inspiration comes from. It's very ingredient-driven and seasonal in that aspect, in that regard. So, you know, we'll see something, and it's like, okay, well, how can we apply this or what technique, how can we present it? And we kind of go from there with the menus. That's just the process for me.
Mm-hmm. I kind of buy, you know, we'll get a bunch of stuff off the truck and then I'll stand in the walk-in until like I'm freezing and just kind of spinning around and looking at things and thinking and, you know, get hit with the door a million times by all the guys coming in and out. And they're like, "You still in here, chef?" And I'm like, "Yeah. Working on something."
Well, and this has got to be, you guys, like trust with the suppliers and that you work with in a way, too, that they're going to bring you good stuff that fits your program, will be inspirational to you, has their eye on what's good that's out there that you're going to maybe be looking for.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you develop those relationships. Mm-hmm. And so you use the people that you trust, and you support those people that are supporting you.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where, you know, you kind of develop that kind of understanding.
And a lot of the people that work for those farms, I feel like a lot of the time have culinary backgrounds or worked in kitchens, and they really seem to value the small kitchens, you know, like Angeline, like Sylvain, that, you know, we care about the quality of things, not just that we have to have, you know, this certain item in because it's on the menu. It's like, you know, we only want it if it's good.
Right.
And they really appreciate that and seem to, a lot of the guys, you know, delivering for Chapa Pila or Kobe Rise, they cater to that, and they really respect that and appreciate that, you know, we're not doing mass-produced stuff, and we do care about the quality and integrity of the product we get.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And if it's, I mean, bottom line, if it's something that we don't want, we'll send it back.
Send it back.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. And I've, you know, there's purveyors in the city that I'm not going to name that I won't use, mm-hmm. because I've just had disagreements with them in the past over quality.
Mm-hmm. So. That makes all the sense in the world. You guys, we got about 1 minute left. Martha, do me a favor. So tell people, where is Sylvain? How do they find you on the street? How do they find you online? All that good stuff.
Sylvain is located at 625 Charter Street in the historic French Quarter. At 70130 is the area zip code.
By Jackson Square.
Right by Jackson Square.
Overheard one time really quickly in the bar somebody explaining a cocktail that the Vue Carré meant view on the square.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And I wanted name view from the square. That's what that stands for.
Great. And SylvainNola.com, is that?
SylvainNola.com. Yeah.
Great. Alex, Angeline?
I moved four blocks down the down Charter Street towards
Esplanade.
You can't
stop laughing at me.
Yeah. Just on the other side of Jackson Square, 1032 Charter Street, and online, all the information's at AngelineNola.com.
Awesome. You guys, thanks so much for being here today. It was really a lot of fun seeing you in one place at the same time. It's been a little while.
Thanks, man.
Yeah.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Martha, Alex, thank you. Happy holidays to both of you, to you and yours.
Same to you.
Hope you guys, thank you. Have a great Christmas.
You
folks,
too.
Thank you so much. Everybody else out there, hope you have a great Christmas, too. I really appreciate you tuning in, and the best to you and yours. I'll be back next Thursday with another show. And until then, cheers and happy holiday, y'all.